Change your state of being with the feelings of these elevated emotions and focus on broadcasting that new electromagnetic signature into the field. Remain in this state for 2 to 3 minutes. Next, open your eyes. And without looking at anything or anyone, open your focus and keep your awareness on the space around your body in space while maintaining a trance state. Begin walking with your eyes open while you stay entranced. With each step you take, embody that new energy, that new frequency of whatever you're creating in your future. As you take this energy with you during your waking daily life, walking as your new self, you are activating the same neurological networks and producing the same level of mind as when you meditate with your eyes closed. Next, remember your future. Let the images come, feeling them and embodying them. Own them. Become them. Continue to walk for about 10 minutes and then stop to recalibrate. Once again, close your eyes and raise your energy. Stay present with this energy for about 5 to 10 minutes. For the next 10 minutes, with your eyes open in trance, walk again with intent and purpose as your future self. With each step you take, embodying this new energy, you move closer to your destiny and it moves closer to you. Do this cycle 2 times. When you finish the second round, stop and stand still 1 last time, really focusing on how you feel with your 4th energy center open. You can use this opportunity to affirm who you are based on how you feel. For example, if you're feeling unlimited, you can literally acknowledge, "I am unlimited." Next, place your hand over your beautiful heart and be willing to feel valuable and worthy enough to receive what you have created. Raise your energy to its zenith and feel gratitude, appreciation, and thankfulness. Now acknowledge the divine within you, the energy that powers you and gives rise to all of life. Give thanks for a new life before it's made manifest. Acknowledging the power within you, ask that your life be filled with unexpected wonder, synchronicities and coincidences that create a joy for existence. Radiate your love while loving your new life into existence. Chapter 10, Case Studies, Making It Real. In the case studies that follow, you'll be introduced to people just like you who took time out of their busy lives to create a new future. Every day they define themselves by a vision of this future instead of by the memories of their past. You could say they were more in love with their future than they were with their past. The act of doing the work daily and turning the practices in the last 3 chapters into a skill led them to become more supernatural. Pay attention to how simple they made it. Tim gets the key to his future. At an advanced workshop in Seattle, which typically coincides with Halloween, we ask our students to dress up as their future selves on the first night. Tim dressed up as a supernatural Swami. He'd always wanted to be a Swami, subscribed to the lifestyle, and at a young age had left his hometown in Connecticut to study in an ashram. At the start of the event, participants also received a gift from our company, a key to symbolize unlocking the potential of each participant's future self. Tim had attended several advanced level workshops in the past. The first time he made a mind movie, he inserted a picture of gold and silver coins in one of his scenes. For years, he had been trying to surrender the emotion of fear, but at a certain point he realized that behind the fear was unworthiness. So for Tim, the coins were a symbol of worthiness. Everybody wants wealth, he told me. But because I was on the spiritual path into yoga and everything else that goes with it, I had the mentality that I had to be poor and embrace poverty to truly walk the talk. So instead of the gold and silver coins merely representing wealth, they represented being worthy to receive. For Tim's Seattle Mind movie, he added more images to evolve his vision. As another symbol for worthiness, Tim used a Chinese character that meant wealth. But because he never desired money, below the symbol he placed the word affluence. He preferred affluence because when he looked up the word's definition, he found that its Latin root meant to flow toward. Wouldn't it be great, he thought, if everything I wanted flowed toward me? Although Tim is very analytical, after continuously watching his mind movie in tandem with the kaleidoscope, he found he could quickly bypass the analytical mind and get into the subconscious mind, the operating system, to program his future. During the workshop, when it came time to dimensionalize a scene in his mind movie, he had a profound experience. He started to feel joy and then a wildly enthusiastic love for life, almost like a burning sensation in his heart. He said he felt as if he could set the world on fire. Then during the meditation, I told the students it was time to open up and receive, and that's when Tim says energy began to enter his body. I don't know where it came from, he told me, but it was like someone had turned on a spigot. I shot straight up. The energy came in through the top of my head and then moved out through my hands. My palms were face down, yet without conscious control, the energy caused them to lift and turn over. I lost track of time and space and had no idea where I was. But for the rest of the meditation, I was in an ecstatic, exalted state. I knew somehow that everything was going to be different and that I was no longer the same person. When the energy downloaded into Tim, he believed it was carrying a message of worthiness because he was never the same afterward. I'm convinced that the new information that came into my body rewrote my DNA, erasing the old self, because that part of my personality is now gone, he says. When Tim got home to Phoenix, where he owned and operated a futon shop, he returned to business as usual on Monday morning. On Thursday, a woman who had purchased a futon from him several years earlier came into his shop. Since the day she purchased the futon, they had formed a friendship, and every few weeks she would stop by to chat. She was now retired and came into the shop to tell Tim she had just finished making out her will. She wanted Tim to be her executor. Tim felt honored, and he thanked her. Here it is, she said, placing it on the counter along with a key. Read it. Tim began scanning the document to discover that not only was he the executor, she was also bequeathing him $110,000 worth of gold and silver coins. The key she placed on the counter was the key to her safe deposit box, where she kept the coins, which of course matched the picture in Tim's mind movie. In an instant, Tim remembered the similar key to his future he had received at the Advanced Workshop in Seattle. Now that's being worth it. Sarah can't touch the ground. On Labor Day 2016, Sarah severely injured her back attempting to prevent a 5-ton boat from crashing into a dock. For 7 weeks, she was in agony and she endured physical therapy, took a cocktail of medications, and made countless visits to the chiropractor. After nothing else helped, her doctor scheduled Sarah for surgery, but first she decided to attend an advanced workshop in Cancun. Because of how much pain Sarah was in, her son suggested she bring a wheelchair. She decided not to, and when she arrived at the hotel, she collapsed on the floor in pain. Later, when she got into the pool on a float, she had severe spasms when she attempted to get out. Sarah was not new to my work, so she came to Cancun with her meditation cushion and her mind movie. In her mind movie, she was healthy, strong, and able to run again. She could play basketball with her son and lacrosse with her daughter. Every time Sarah saw herself in the scene performing aerial yoga, she embraced the joy she knew she would feel if she could actually do it. And when she heard the song from her mind movie, her energy rose. During the first few days, when she was tightening her core muscles and drawing energy up her spine with the breathing technique, she felt her sciatic nerve pulsating. It was as if a warm electric current was traveling up the nerve. At the same time, she had the intention that the energy was a healing light ascending her spinal column. On the third day, she started her morning by searching the internet until she found an image of a woman doing aerial yoga. She carried that image in her mind all day. That afternoon, our students were working with the kaleidoscope and their mind movies. After they unfolded into the quantum field, I then asked them to dimensionalize a scene from their mind movie. When the meditation was finished, I instructed them to lie down on the floor. But as Sarah told me later, she couldn't find the floor. She kept reaching lower and lower, searching for it, but it was no longer there. The next thing she knew, she was in another dimension, having a full-on, IMAX-like sensory experience, but without her senses. She was living a future scene of her mind movie. Enough circuits in her brain had turned on to make her internal experience as real as any external experience she had ever had. She was not visualizing this scene, she was in it, living it. I realized I was in another reality, a different time and space. I was in my future, she explained, and I was actually performing aerial yoga. I was hanging upside down, and the floor wasn't there. I kept reaching for it, but I was just swinging upside down from this beautiful red silk scarf. I felt freedom from my pain. I was swinging freely in space. Eventually she did lie down, with tears of joy flowing down her cheeks. When she came out of that meditation, all of her pain was gone. I knew I was healed, she said. I was in awe of the power of my mind, and I felt tremendous gratitude. I continue to manifest things from my mind movie. In fact, my mind movie can't even keep up with my life. Terry walks into a new future. In September 2016, while practicing her walking meditation along Australia's beautiful Sunshine Coast, Terry had a profound experience. Toward the end of her meditation, when she stopped for the final part, she was feeling connected, uplifted and expansive. As she followed my instructions, she opened herself up to the field with the intention of being worthy of her future life. With no warning, she felt an electric charge enter her body through the crown of her head, where it continued to flow down into her heart. As the energy coursed through the rest of her body, surging through her thighs and down into her feet, her legs began shaking uncontrollably. The only way I can describe it is that there was an intense shaking from the inside, she told me. But it was a voltage of energy that my body had never experienced. I thought I was going to fall over. It was at that point I lost all conscious control over my lower body. She burst into uncontrollable tears. And with that release, her mind and body also began to let go. Time appeared to stand still. Terry understood that her body was surrendering a lifetime of past unresolved emotions. As the surge of electricity continued to move through her, she felt huge amounts of dense, dark matter falling away from her body. I believe this matter was trauma, not only from my lifetime, but also past lifetimes, she remembered. It included the trauma of my father nearly dying from a suicide attempt when I was 8, which has cast a shadow over my life by preventing me from allowing myself to receive unconditional love. She felt all her limiting beliefs, many of which she had acquired through deep emotional conditioning and the unconscious beliefs of others, simply dissolve. Everything that was not in alignment with who I really am just fell away, Terry said. I experienced true liberation, something my soul has been yearning for a very long time. I knew in that moment that my soul had guided me to that very beach, at that very moment, with all these people to do this important work. She fell to her knees, an overwhelming amount of love flowing through her. Kneeling in the sand, humbled by this power, she saw that every choice she had made up to that point was necessary for her to arrive at this poignant moment. In that instant, she observed who she had been for the last year, consistently choosing to do the meditations every day, all the while falling in love with herself. She knew that her future self in that moment was calling her past self to have this experience of profound love. When Terry came back to the three-dimensional reality of her senses, she felt an overwhelming sense of peace and oneness with everything around her. She reported a deep reconnection to her physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual self, and said she felt more like herself than she had in a very long time. This experience reminded me that I am, as we all are, an aspect of divine energy, she said, and that I am worthy of receiving it. Chapter 11. Space-time and time-space. We live in a three-dimensional universe, uni meaning one, where everything that exists is made up of people, objects, places, and time. For the most part, it's a dimension of particles and matter. Through our senses, we experience these things as form, structure, mass, and density. If I place an ice cube, your cell phone, or an apple pie in front of you, for example, you could not experience any of these objects without your senses. It's your senses that give rise to your experience of physical reality. While the ice cube, cell phone, and apple pie all have height, width, and depth, they only exist to you because you can see, hear, taste, smell, and feel them. If you lost your five senses, or they were simultaneously eliminated, you would be incapable of experiencing these physical objects, because you would have no awareness of them. They would literally not exist to you, because in this three-dimensional reality, you can't experience them without your senses. Or can you? According to astrophysics, in this realm of three dimensions, the known universe, let's call it space-time reality, there's an infinite amount of space. Take a moment to ponder that concept. From the small perch where we sit staring out into the universe, when we look up at the night sky, we only see a sliver of the universe. It appears to us as infinite, and yet infinite is even bigger than that. In other words, in the realm of space-time, space is eternal. It has no end and goes on forever. But what about time? The way you and I typically experience time is by moving our bodies through space. For example, it might take you 5 minutes to set this book down, walk to the kitchen, pour a glass of water and return. This occurs because a thought that originated in your mind created a vision of what you were going to do in the kitchen. You acted on that thought, and consequently, you experienced time by moving from one point to another through space. Before you walked to the kitchen and as you were sitting in your chair, when you became conscious of the kitchen in relation to where you were sitting, you experienced a separation of two points of consciousness, where you sat and the kitchen. To close the gap between those two points of consciousness, you moved your body through space, and that took time. It makes sense then that the greater the space or distance between two points, the greater the time it takes to get from one point to the other. Conversely, the faster the speed at which you travel between these two points, the shorter the amount of time it takes. This measurement of the time it takes an object to move through space is the foundation for Newtonian physics, or classical mechanics. In the Newtonian world, if we know certain properties about an object, such as its force, acceleration, direction, speed, and the distance it will travel, we can make time-based predictions. Therefore, Newtonian physics is based on knowns and predictable outcomes. We can say, then, that when there's a separation between two points of consciousness, as you move from one point of consciousness to another point of consciousness, you are collapsing space. As a result of collapsing space, you experience time. Take a look at figure 11.1 to further understand the relationship between space and time in our three-dimensional world. Here's another example. If I'm writing this book and I want to finish this chapter, it's going to take time. I may not have to move my body very much through space, but I still experience time. Why? Because where I presently am in the process of writing this chapter represents one point in consciousness, and finishing the chapter represents another. The completion of this chapter represents a future moment separate from the present moment. The space between, the closing of the gap between these two points in consciousness, is the experience of time. If you look at figure 11.1 again, it will help you gain a better understanding about time. To achieve my desired goal of arriving at the end of the chapter, I repeatedly have to do something. This requires me to use my senses to interact and move through my environment with a coordinated set of behaviors. And again, this takes time. If I cease writing and do something else, such as watch a movie, it's going to take more time for me to reach my intended result. Therefore, to achieve my goal of completing this chapter, I must consistently align my actions to match my intentions. In this material world of three dimensions, because we use our senses to navigate space, we place most of our attention on physical things such as people, objects, and places. They all are made up of matter, and they are localized, meaning they occupy a position in space and time. These all represent points of consciousness from which we experience separation. For instance, when you observe your best friend sitting across the table from you, or look at your car parked in the driveway, you notice the space between you and your friend or the car. As a result, you feel separate from them. You are here, and your friend or the car is there. In addition, if you have dreams and goals, then where you are in the present moment and where your dreams exist as a reality in your future also creates the experience of separation. It's safe to say then that 1. In order for us to navigate this three-dimensional reality, we need our senses. 2. The more we use our senses to define reality, the more we experience separation. 3. Because most of this three-dimensional reality is sensory-based, space and time create the experience of separation from everyone, everything, every place, and everybody in every time. 4. All things material occupy one position in space and time. That's called locality in physics. In this chapter, we are going to explore and contrast two models of reality, space-time and time-space. Space-time is the physical Newtonian world based on knowns, predictable outcomes, matter, and the three-dimensional universe in which we live, which is made up of infinite space. Time-space is the non-physical quantum world, an inverse reality based on unknowns, endless possibilities, energy, and the multidimensional multiverse where we also live, which consists of infinite time. I'm going to challenge your understanding and perception of the nature of reality, because if you're going to experience the mystery of self as a dimensional being, you're going to need a roadmap to get there. Stress and the consequences of living in a perpetual state of survival. Because we use our senses to observe and determine physical reality, we identify as a body living in space and time, yet separate from everything in our environment. Over time, this interaction creates the experience of our identity. Throughout our lives, via the different interactions we have at certain times and places with people, things, and objects, our identity evolves into a personality. The quality of these interactions with our external environment creates lasting memories, and these memories shape who we become. We call this process experience, and it is life's experiences that shape who we are. And as you know, the majority of people's personality is based on past experiences. As you learned in Chapter 8, to our brains, the material objects, things, people, and places that we perceive daily occur to us as patterns, and the recognition of these patterns is called memory. If the self is created from memories of past experiences, then memories are based on knowns. Therefore, most of our three-dimensional world is based on knowns. This is where most of us focus our attention. When you align everything material in your external world with the memories of your past experiences, you recognize them as familiar. You're matching a physical reality with a set of neurological networks in your brain. This is called pattern recognition, and it's the process whereby most people perceive reality through a lens of the past. We could say, then, that we're materialists, not only living in this dimension, but also enslaved to and limited by it, because we've defined ourselves as a body living in an environment at certain times, and our focus is more on matter and less on energy. From a quantum perspective, we're keeping our attention on the physical particle, matter, instead of the immaterial wave of possibilities, energy. This is how we become immersed in this three-dimensional reality. When stress is thrown into the equation, our body begins to draw from the invisible electromagnetic field of energy around us to produce chemistry. The greater the frequency, intensity, and duration of the stress, the more energy our body consumes. The very nature of these chemicals endorses our senses, causing us to pay attention to matter and knowns. As this vital field of energy around our body shrinks, we feel more like matter and less like energy. In fact, when our frequency slows down, our bodies become more dense as we run out of energy. As we've discussed, this is fine for the short term when danger, crisis, or a predator is lurking around the corner. In fact, the fight or flight response has been a cornerstone of our evolution. In this state, stress chemicals heighten our senses, narrowing our focus to whatever matter in our environment represents potential danger. When this happens, our neocortex, the part of our brain involved in sensory perception, motor commands, spatial reasoning and language, fires and becomes aroused. For survival purposes, this narrows our focus on our body and the external threat, causing us to become preoccupied by the time between the moment of the perceived threat and the moment we reach physical safety, both of which are points of consciousness. The more we experience stress, the more we feel separation. As you read in Chapter 2, the long-term effect of living in survival mode is that we begin to thrive on and become addicted to these stress chemicals. The more addicted we are to them, the more we believe we are our bodies that are local, that is, that are living in a particular place in space and occupying a particular position in linear time. The result is a manic, frenetic state where we continuously shift our attention from one person to one problem to one thing to one place in our environment. The evolutionary trait that once protected us now works against us, and we live in a constant high alert, obsessing about time. Because we view our external environment as unsafe, all of our attention is on our environment. As our outer world now appears more real than our inner world, we're addicted to someone or something in our external environment, and the longer we live in this state, the more our brain moves into high beta brainwaves. And as you know by now, prolonged high beta brainwaves cause us to feel pain, anxiety, worry, fear, anger, frustration, judgment, impatience, aggression, and competition. As a result, our brainwaves become incoherent, and so do we. When the emotions of survival have a hold on us, we need the conditions in our external world, our problems with different people, financial hardships, fear of terrorism, disdain for our job, to reaffirm our addiction to those emotions. These emotional addictions cause us to become preoccupied by whatever we think might be causing the upset in our environment, whether it be someone or something. And as a result, the survival gene switches on. Now we're living in a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you understand that where you place your attention is where you place your energy, you know that the stronger the emotional reaction associated with the cause, the more you will consistently place all your attention on a person, thing, or problem in your external world. When you do this, you are giving quite a bit of your power away to someone or something. Now all your attention and energy is anchored in this three-dimensional realm of the material, and your emotional state is causing you to continuously reaffirm your present reality. You can become emotionally attached to the reality you really want to change. This mismanagement of your energy keeps you enslaved to the world of the knowns, trying to predict the future based on the past. What's more, when you're in the survival state, the unknown or the unpredictable is a scary place. So for you to truly make changes in your life, you would have to step into the unknown, and if you don't, nothing ever really changes. The Newtonian 3D space-time reality. Living as a somebody with something, somewhere in some time. If feelings and emotions are a record of the past, and those feelings are driving your hardwired thoughts and behaviors, you'll keep repeating your past and therefore become predictable. Now you're firmly ensconced in the Newtonian world because Newtonian physics is based on predictable outcomes. The more you live in stress, the more you are simply matter trying to affect matter, matter trying to fight, force, manipulate, predict, control, and compete for outcomes. As a result, everything you want to change, manifest, or influence is going to take a lot of time, because in this space-time reality, you have to move your physical body through space to create the outcomes you want. The more you are living in survival and using your senses to define reality, the more you experience separation from a new future. Between where you are presently as one point of consciousness and where you want to be as another point of consciousness lies a very long distance, not to mention that your constant obsession on how it's going to happen is based on how you think and predict it should happen. But if you're predicting, your thinking is based on knowns, so there's no room for an unknown or new possibility in your life. If you are trying to buy a house, for example, you need to save for a down payment, look for a house, get a loan, go through the application process, beat out other buyers, and then spend 30 years dragging your body back and forth to work, through space, trying to pay it off. These two points in consciousness, having the idea to buy the house and having the house with the mortgage paid off, are going to take time to intersect. In a similar way, if you want a new relationship, you might go online, set up a profile, scroll through countless other profiles, make a list of people to reach out to, contact each one, and eventually go on many dates in the hope of finding someone intriguing. If you want a new job, you might take the time to create a resume, search for open positions, and go on interviews. What these processes have in common is they require time, which you experience as linear. You may get what you want, but the more you live in survival, the more time it's going to take because you're matter trying to influence matter. And there's a distinct separation in space and time between where you are and where you want to be. We can agree then that in this three-dimensional reality, within your experience of time, there's a definite past, present, and future. Since you live in linear time, you also experience a separation from time because the past, present, and future appear as separate moments in time. You are here, and your future is there. Figure 11.2 graphically represents how the past, present, and future all exist as distinct, discontinuous moments. As I said earlier, thanks to Newtonian physics, we've unraveled the natural laws of force, acceleration, and matter, allowing us to predict outcomes. If we know the general direction, velocity, and rotation of an object traveling through space, for the most part, we can predict where it's going to end up and how long it will take. This is why we can travel from New York to Los Angeles by plane, predict how long it's going to take to get there, and know where the plane will land. Within the understanding of Newtonian physics and this three-dimensional world we live in, many of us spend most of our lives focusing our attention outward on trying to become a someone, have some body, own some things, go somewhere, and experience something in some time. When we don't have the things we want, we experience lack, and lack and separation cause us to live in a state of duality and polarity. It's natural for us to want what we don't have. In fact, this is how we create things. When we experience separation from our future desires, we think and dream of what we want and then set about performing a series of actions in linear time to get them. If we're always under financial stress, for example, we want money. If we have a disease, we want health. If we feel lonely, we want a relationship or companionship. Because of this experience of duality and separation, we are driven to create, and this is how we naturally evolve and grow toward our dreams. But if we are matter, focused on matter, trying to influence matter to get money, health, love, and so on, as we've established, it's going to take quite a bit of time and energy. When we finally attain what we're seeking, the emotion we feel from the fruition of our creation, or the meeting of those two points of consciousness, satiates the sense of lack we formerly experienced. When the new job comes, we feel secure. When the new relationship manifests, we feel love and joy. As we heal, we feel more whole. If we are living in this state, we are waiting for something or someone outside of us to change how we feel internally. Once we feel relief from the experience of lack, because we are embracing the emotion correlated with the manifestation of the external event, we pay close attention to whomever or whatever caused the relief. This cause and effect forms a new memory, and to some degree, we evolve. When something in our world doesn't happen, or seems to be taking a long time to happen, we experience more lack because we feel even more separate from what we are trying to create. Now, our own emotional state of lack, frustration, impatience, and separation is keeping our dreams at a distance, further increasing the time it will take for our desired outcome to occur. From somebody to nobody. From someone to no one. From something to nothing. From somewhere to nowhere. And from some time to no time. If Newtonian laws are an outward expression of the physical material laws of space-time, a dimension where there's more space than time, we could say, in a sense, that quantum laws are the inverse. The quantum is an inward expression of the laws of nature, an invisible field of information and energy that unifies everything material. This immaterial field organizes, connects, and governs all the laws of nature. It is a dimension where there's more time than space. In other words, it's a dimension where time is eternal. As you learned in chapters 2 and 3, when we take our attention off people and things at certain places in our external world, no longer placing our attention on our body and ceasing to think about time and schedules, we become no body, no one, no thing, nowhere, and in no time. We do this through a process of disconnecting from our body, our identity, our gender, our disease, our name, our problems, our personal relationships, our pain, our past, and so on. This is what it means to get beyond the self, to go from the consciousness of somebody to nobody, from the consciousness of someone to no one, from the consciousness of something to nothing, from the consciousness of somewhere to nowhere, and from the consciousness of being in some time to being in no time. See figure 11.3. And take a glance at figure 11.4. As we move from a narrow focus to an open focus and begin to surrender all aspects of self, we move away from the external world of people, things, places, schedules, to-do lists, and so on, and turn our attention to the inner world of energy, vibration, frequency and consciousness. Our research shows that when we take our attention off objects and matter, and instead open our focus to energy and information, different parts of the brain work together in harmony. The result of this unification of the brain is that we feel more whole. When we do this properly, our heart begins to open, beat more rhythmically, and thus become more coherent. As the heart moves into coherence, so too does our brain. And because our identity is out of the way, meaning we've gotten beyond our body, a particular place in our known environment and time, the act of eliminating those things causes us to move to alpha and theta brainwave patterns, and we connect with the autonomic nervous system. As the ANS becomes activated, its job is to restore order and balance, causing coherence and wholeness in our heart, brain, body, and energy field. This coherence is then reflected in all aspects of our biology. It is in this state where we begin to connect to the quantum, or unified field. From the illusion of separation to the reality of oneness. If Newtonian physics explains the physical laws of nature and the universe on a grand scale, the gravitational force of the sun upon planets, the speed with which the apple falls from the tree, and so on, The quantum world deals with the fundamental nature of things at their smallest scale, such as atomic and subatomic particles. Newtonian laws are physical constants of nature, so the Newtonian world is an objective world of measurability and predictable outcomes. Quantum laws, however, deal with the unpredictable and the unseen, the world of energy, waves, frequency, information, consciousness, and all spectrums of light. Governing this world is an unseen constant, a single field of information called the unified field. We can think of the Newtonian world as dealing with the objective, where mind and matter are separate, and of the quantum world as dealing with the subjective, where mind and matter are unified by energy, or better yet, where mind and matter are so connected that it's impossible to separate the two. In the quantum or unified field, there's no separation between two points of consciousness. It is the domain of oneness or unity consciousness. Whereas in our three-dimensional reality, space is infinite, in the quantum world, time is infinite. If time is infinite and eternal, it's no longer linear, meaning there is no separation of past or future. With no past or future, everything is happening right now, in this eternal present moment. Because time is infinite in this time-space reality, as we move through time, we experience space or spaces. In the material world of things, when we move through space, we experience time. Yet in the immaterial quantum world of energy and frequency, the opposite is true. In the world of space-time, as we increase or decrease the speed with which we go from point A to point B, the time it takes to get there changes. In the world of time-space, as we become aware of an increase or decrease in the speed of the frequency or vibration of energy, we can go from one space to another space or from one dimension to another dimension. When we collapse space, we experience time in the material reality. When we collapse time, we experience spaces or dimensions in the immaterial reality. Each of those individual frequencies is carrying information or a level of consciousness that we experience as different realities as we become aware of them. In figure 11.5, you can see that as you move through time, you experience different dimensions in the eternal present moment. In space-time, you experience the environment with your body, your senses, and time. Time appears linear because you are separate from objects, things, people and places, as well as the past and the future. In time-space, however, you experience this realm with your awareness, as a consciousness, not as a body with senses. This realm exists beyond your senses. You access this domain when you are totally in the present moment, so there is no past or future. Just one long now. Since your awareness is beyond the realm of matter, because you have taken all of your attention off matter, you can become aware of different frequencies, all carrying information, and these frequencies allow you to have access to different unknown dimensions. So if you are in a realm above the senses and unfolding as a consciousness into the energy of the unified field, you can experience many possible dimensional realities. I know that this is a big bite to take in all at once, so hang in there. If you are confused, it means you're about to learn something new. When I say that as you move through time you experience space or spaces, I mean all possible dimensions and possible realities. We could say then that in this time-space reality, all possible spaces or dimensions exist in an infinite time. This is the unified field, the realm of possibility, unknowns and new potential realities, all of which exist in endless time, which is every time. Let's think of it another way. Everybody I know is always saying that they want or need more time to get more things accomplished. If you add more time, you could create more experiences, do more things, and therefore get more things done. This would mean more possibilities could happen and you could live more of life. So now imagine that there was an infinite amount of time because the past and the future no longer exists, so time is standing still. And you had all the time you needed. Wouldn't you agree that you could have endless possible experiences and therefore could live many lives? We could say then that an infinite number of experiences would be available to you, equal to your imagination. To say it yet another way, if time is eternal, then more spaces can exist in that infinite time. If we keep elongating or making more time, it makes sense that we can fit more spaces in time. If there is an infinite time, then there are infinite spaces we can fit in time, which are endless possibilities, potential realities, dimensions, and experiences. In the quantum field, there is no separation of past or future because everything that is exists in the eternal now or the eternal present moment. If everything that is exists unified or connected in the quantum field, then its infinite frequencies contain information about everybody, everyone, everything, everywhere, and every time. As your consciousness begins to merge with the consciousness and energy of the unified field, you will go from the consciousness of somebody to the consciousness of nobody to the consciousness of everybody, from the consciousness of someone to the consciousness of no one to the consciousness of everyone, from the consciousness of something to the consciousness of no thing to the consciousness of everything, from the consciousness of somewhere to the consciousness of nowhere to the consciousness of everywhere, and from the consciousness of being in some time to the consciousness of being in no time to the consciousness of being in every time. Take a look at figure 11.6. The atom, fact and fiction. To help you understand how the quantum field is constructed, you first need to revisit the possibilities that exist in the atom. When we reduce matter to its smallest unit of measurement, we get the atom, and the atom vibrates at a very high frequency. If we could peel back the atom like an orange, we'd find a nucleus and subatomic particles such as protons, neutrons, and electrons. But for the most part, we'd find that it's 99.999999999999% empty space, or energy as you read earlier. Take a look at figure 11.7. On the left we see the classical model of the atom that we were taught in grade school. But this is in fact an outdated model. In actuality, electrons don't move in fixed rotations around the nucleus like planets orbiting the sun. Instead, as you see on the right, the space around the nucleus is more like an invisible field or a cloud of information. And as we know, all information is made up of light, frequency, and energy. To get an understanding of just how small these subatomic particles are, if the nucleus of an atom were increased to the size of a Volkswagen Beetle, the size of the electron would be equal to the size of a pea. Meanwhile, the space where the electron could exist would be 85,000 square miles. That's twice the size of Cuba. That's a lot of empty space for the electron to exist in. According to Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, we never know where the electron is going to appear in the electron cloud, yet from nothing comes something. This is why quantum physics is so exciting and unpredictable. The electron is not always physical matter. Rather, it exists as the energy or as the probability of a wave. It is only through the act of observation by an observer that it appears. Once an observer, mind, comes along and looks for it, the act of observation, directed energy, causes all that potential energy to collapse into an electron, matter. Thus it manifests from the realm of infinite possibilities, an unknown, to a known. It becomes local in space and time. When the observer is no longer observing it, the electron turns back into possibility. That's the wave function. In other words, it turns back into energy, returning to the unknown and to its own agenda. When it turns back to energy and possibility, it becomes non-local. In the realm of the quantum, mind and matter are indivisible. Therefore, if Newtonian physics is the world of the predictable, the quantum is the world of the unpredictable. When we close our eyes in meditation and open our focus to infinite space, this is exactly what we are doing. We are putting more of our attention on energy, space, information, and possibility rather than on matter. We are becoming less aware of the material realm and more aware of the immaterial realm. We are investing our energy into the unpredictable and unknown and disinvesting our attention and energy from the predictable and the known. Each time we do this, we develop a deeper understanding of what the unified field is. Before we go any further, let's briefly review what we just learned. Take a moment to review figure 11.8. The three-dimensional Newtonian world is made up of objects, people, places, matter, particles, and time. Basically most of the nouns, or everything we know in our external world. And in this world, there's more space than time. As a body, we use our senses to define this infinite space we live in. A universe of form, structure, dimension, and density. This is the realm of the known and predictable. Because we experience the material universe with our senses provide us with information that occurs as patterns in our brain, which we recognize as structures, and it is through this process that things in our external environment become knowns. It is also through this process that we become a somebody, a someone with some things in some place and in some time. Finally, because we experience the universe with our senses, we experience separation. Therefore, this is the realm of duality and polarity. Now review figure 11.9. If the Newtonian world is a material world defined by the senses, in the quantum world the opposite is true. This is an immaterial world defined by nonsense. In other words, there's nothing sensory-based here, and there's no matter. Whereas the Newtonian world is based on predictable knowns, such as matter, particles, people, places, things, objects, and time. This is an unpredictable dimension made up of light, frequency, information, vibration, energy, and consciousness. If our three-dimensional world is a dimension of matter, where there's more space than time, the quantum world is a dimension of antimatter, a place where there's more time than space. Because there is more time than space, all possibilities exist in the eternal present moment. Whereas the three-dimensional world is our universe, meaning one reality, the quantum world is a multiverse, meaning many realities. If the space-time reality is based on separation, then the immaterial quantum world, or unified field, is based on oneness, connectedness, wholeness, and unity, non-locality. In order for us to go from our known space-time, three-dimensional universe, a universe made up of matter where we experience duality and polarity, to the unknown time-space, five-dimensional, multiverse, a place where there is no matter, but instead light information, frequency, vibration, energy, and consciousness, we have to cross a bridge. That bridge is the speed of light. When we become pure consciousness and become no body, no one, no thing, nowhere, in no time, we are crossing that threshold from matter to energy. When Einstein introduced the equation E equals mc squared in his theory of special relativity, for the first time in the history of science, he demonstrated from a mathematical standpoint that energy and matter are related. What converts matter to energy is the speed of light, which means anything material traveling faster than the speed of light leaves our three-dimensional reality and turns into immaterial energy. In other words, in the three-dimensional world, the speed of light is the threshold for matter, or anything physical, to retain its form. No thing can travel faster than the speed of light, not even information. Anything traveling from one point to another that is traveling slower than the speed of light is going to take time. Therefore, the fourth dimension is time. Time is the nexus that connects the three-dimensional world to the fifth-dimensional world and beyond. Once something is traveling faster than the speed of light, there is no time or no separation between two points of consciousness, because every thing, material, becomes energy. This is how you go from three dimensions to five dimensions, from a universe to the multiverse, from this dimension to all dimensions. Let me give you an example to help simplify this complex idea. French physicist Alain Aspect performed a famous quantum physics experiment in the early 1980s called the Bell Test Experiments. In the study, scientists entangled two photons, causing them to bond together. They then shot the two photons in opposite directions, creating distance and space between them. When they influenced one photon to disappear, the other photon vanished at exactly the same time. This experiment was a cornerstone study in the breakthrough of quantum physics, because it proved that Einstein's theory of relativity wasn't completely correct. What it showed was that there is a unifying field of information existing beyond three-dimensional space and time that connects all matter. If the two particles of light were not connected by some invisible field of energy, it would have taken time for information to travel from one local point in space to the other local point in space. According to Einstein's theory, if one particle disappeared, the other particle should disappear a moment later, unless they were occupying the same space at the same time. Even if the second photon was affected a millisecond later, because they were separated by space, time would have played a factor in relaying the information. This would have reaffirmed that the ceiling of this physical reality is the speed of light, and everything material that exists here is separate. Because the two particles vanished at exactly the same time, it proved that all matter, bodies, people, things, objects, places, and even time are connected by frequency and information in a realm beyond three-dimensional reality and time. Everything beyond the material is unified in a state of oneness. The information was communicated between those two photons non-locally. Since there is no separation between two points of consciousness in the five-dimensional reality, there is no linear time. There is only all times. Mystical quantum physicist David Bohm called the realm of the quantum the implicate order, where everything is connected. He called the explicit order the material realm of separation. If you look at figures 11.8 and 11.9 again, it will help you to get your mind around both worlds. When you take your attention off being somebody, someone, something, somewhere, in some time, and you become no body, no one, no thing, nowhere, in no time, you are becoming pure consciousness. your consciousness merges with the unified field, which is made only of consciousness and energy, where you connect to the self-organizing consciousness of everybody, everyone, everything, everywhere, in every time. Thus, as you surrender as an awareness, without your senses, into this field of oneness where there is no separation, and you keep going deeper into the void or blackness, because nothing physical exists there, you as a consciousness become less separate from the consciousness of the unified field. If you can keep becoming more conscious and aware of it, and keep paying attention to it, you are investing your energy in it, and your attention directly at it. Thus, as you keep moving toward it, you will feel less separation and more wholeness. Finally, since only the eternal present moment exists in the unified field, because there is no linear time, only all time, the consciousness and energy of the unified field that is observing all matter into form is always in the present eternal moment. Therefore, in order for you to connect and unify with it, you will have to be completely in the present moment as well. If you review figure 11.10, it shows how you can collapse your own separation and individual consciousness to experience the oneness and wholeness of the unified field. One last point about the speed of light. In this realm of the material world, visible light is a frequency based on polarity, electrons, positrons, photons, and so on. If you look ahead a bit at figure 11.11, according to the scale, approximately one-third of the way up from the slowest frequency is where the division of light takes place. Above this wave or frequency is where matter goes from form to energy and singularity, and below this frequency are division and polarity. When the division of light takes place, photons, electrons, and positrons come into being because the visible light field holds the information template of matter as organized frequency in patterns of light. This division of light is where the Big Bang occurred, where singularity became duality and polarity, where the universe eventually appeared as organized information and matter. That's why this void is eternal blackness. There is no visible light. Because matter vibrates at such a slow frequency, to enter the time-space dimension or the unified field, you can't enter as a body or matter. So you must become no body. You can't take your identity, so you're going to have to become no one. You can't take things, so you must become no thing. You can't be somewhere, so you're going to have to get to nowhere. Finally, if you're living by a familiar past or predictable future where time appears linear, to get to the place of time-space, you're going to have to experience no time. How do you do this? You keep placing your attention on the unified field, not with your senses, but with your awareness. As you change your consciousness, you raise your energy. The more you become aware of this invisible field, the more you're moving further away from the separation of matter and closer to oneness. Now you're in the quantum, or the unified field. This is the realm of information that connects everybody, everyone, everything, everywhere, and every time. The unified field, becoming everybody, everyone, everything, everywhere, in every time. Matter is very dense. And because of its density, it vibrates at the slowest frequency in the universe. In figure 11.11, you see that as you raise matter's frequency by speeding it up faster and faster, matter, as we know it, dematerializes into energy. At some point just beyond the visible light spectrum, above the realm of duality and polarity, any information about matter converts to more unified energy. As you can see, the higher the frequency, the more orderly and coherent that energy becomes. At this level of frequency and energy, duality and polarity unify to become one. We call this love or wholeness because there is no longer any division or separation. It is where positive and negative join, where male and female unite, where the past and future merge, where good and bad no longer exist, where right and wrong no longer apply, where opposites become one. As you continue up this scale away from matter and separation, you continue to experience greater and greater degrees of wholeness, order, and love.